Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
And you are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news from Reactor.com, the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Association, or the SFWA, has announced the finalists for the 59th Nebula Awards, which recognize excellent works of science fiction and fantasy published in 2023. The awards will be presented on June 8th at the 2024 Nebula Conference in Pasadena, California, and the winners are determined by the members of the SFWA. So I'm just going to read off, there's like a few categories here, but I'm going to read off the nominees for the novel category. And the finalists are, for the Nebula Award for novel, The Saint of Bright Doors by Vapra Chandrasekara, The Water Outlaws by S.L. Huang, Translation State by Anne Leckie, The Terraformers by Annalee Newitz, Shagidi and the Brass Head of Abalufan by Wole Talabi, and Witch King by Martha Wells. I have not read any of those books. I have not heard of half of those books. And I feel like I have, like, I see a lot of the new books coming out. And there's so many books, man. Oh my gosh.
So
like, it's just
books.
Impossible to keep up with. And it's daunting because, like, these have accolades. People are really excited about these. These are up for awards. Like, I want to keep my eye on this kind of stuff. Not because I think it's
Especially Martha Wells. I love Martha Wells.
Yeah, Martha Wells is awesome. But, like, not because, like, these books are necessarily that much better. But, I mean, it does, like, motivate me just a little bit more to know that there are, like, pros in these organizations and stuff that have their eyes on these. It makes me a little bit more inclined to check them out. But I can't keep up. Like, this is, like, my whole life, you know? this is our whole life. Like, we talk about fantasy books constantly. We're always thinking about them. And there's stuff like The Water Outlaws. Never heard of it in my entire life. And it's just, and it's up for awards. It's up for a Nebula Award. Ah, man. It's just so, it's so bittersweet. Like, it's so awesome that there's so much out there. But it's also, like, just give me a second. Like, I need, like, a hyperbolic time chamber so I could actually read this stuff.
If we would have picked, like, movies or shows or something, it might have been so much easier because we can just, like, I don't know.
Oh,
I feel like I
can
just
crush
a show, you know, like, no problem. Whereas, like, a book, it takes a little bit more effort, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even novellas. I mean, you can knock out a novella in a day, but I don't know. Sometimes it's a couple days. Sometimes it's 3 days. Sometimes
yes,
it's 2 weeks.
Days,
you know, like, I've definitely chewed on a novella for a while. And I've also knocked out 600 pages in 2 days, too. So it's just, I don't know, just depends.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I've definitely read, like, an entire Dritz book in 1 day. Yeah. And then I've also spent, like, a week and a half on a novella.
These award things that I shout out every now and then, I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression. Like, I'm not saying everybody run out and go buy these books because they're probably so amazing, but it is really interesting to see kind of what people are nominating for different awards. I mean, I've heard Witch King is really impressive, really cool book, but I think that's like a reissue of something. Is that a new book from Martha Wells? Or is that like a... Because I know that she was putting out some, like, she was, like, reissuing some of her old fantasy. If somebody in the Discord could let me know what's up with Witch King, because I actually have it on my shelf over here. But I knew that, like, there was, like, an old series that Martha Wells had written, because Murderbot got really popular. But Martha Wells was a high fantasy writer before Murderbot came out. But Murderbot's, like, probably her most popular stuff. But she has, like, this whole other series.
I know that the Murderbot kind of blasted her into the stratosphere, or at least the main kind of focus of the fantasy world. And as it should have, man, that series was awesome. What a cool, fresh, and fun series of novellas. I really like the format of, maybe I just really like alternative formats, because I'm sure if you've listened to this podcast before, you've heard me be like, I like four books, yeah. I like two books. Those are like my favorite. And I love a series of novellas. That was great. Like Binti, what a cool format. So maybe I just like an alternative format a little bit, you know. I just kind of get off to that, or maybe I'm just sick
of
the trilogy.
I mean, you really
perhaps.
Like He Who Fights with Monsters too, like the lit RPG stuff.
Totally, yeah, different. Yeah. Or give me like 10 books in a row, you know.
Yeah, but it's a different structure too. I mean, it's like really stat based, and there's like a whole other element to it. Yeah, I feel like the normal trilogy.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like you've kind of faded away from it a little bit more than I have. I mean, I still like a good trilogy as long as it's captivating. I mean, like the Greenbone Saga is a trilogy, and that's like consistently good like the entire time. Winter Night's another good example.
Even the massive series that I really like, you know, like the Dritz books or something, they tend to be delivered to me in like trilogy formats. You know, they kind of are broken up that way.
Speaking of the Dritz books, I guess I'll just kind of go into what I've been reading this week. I restarted the Icewind Dale trilogy by R.I. Salvatore. Oh. And this must be like the third time I've read, maybe fourth time I've read The Crystal Shard. I've only read Streams of Silver and Halfling's Gem once, but something about The Crystal Shard, I think it's because it's so episodic and it's kind of all over the place. It's such a weird book. Like lots of time passes between the chapters, and like there's different parts that seem like they're not really connected, but they are. And it's like this kind of like really broad reaching, but also like very narrowly focused fantasy book. And it's just, man, what a weird little book.
It is weird. That's funny. I've never really thought about it as weird since it was literally one of the first fantasy novels that I've... It was definitely in the first 10 fantasy novels that I ever read was The Crystal Shard. And so in my mind, it like is classically structured fantasy. But whenever I go back and read it, which I've done like 10 times, it totally is not a classically structured fantasy. Like the introduction to the characters,
it's like a collection of short stories almost.
It's
not.
You get like weird Brunor fever dream where he's like every dwarf makes one weapon, you know, and like it's just funny.
No, there's so many amazing parts to it. It's Wolfgar is incredible. Like the
where you at?
Like Regis is like telling the people of 10 towns that Eckhart Kessel is a thing and he's a threat and like everyone's arguing. And
so Drist has started training Wolfgar.
That was a little bit ago. Yeah. I mean, it's really cool how much, I don't know, like Salvatore just had the chops, you know, like
you just got,
it's just
chops.
Such a, yeah, man. Like it's just, that was his first book. I mean, I think there was like one or two other weird things that he did before The Crystal Shard, but The Crystal Shard is like his first like really proper book, I'm pretty sure.
I forget how much time does pass in that book series, because you have like Wolfgar Young,
yeah,
and then
like
he like grows up, and yeah, there's multiple big chunks of time.
It's a weird book, yeah. Totally. And then like the ending, if I'm remembering correctly, is like this really weird mishmash of things, and then Streams of Silver, and if anybody's really confused about what Chad and I are talking about, the Icewind Dale trilogy is a classic fantasy set in Faerun. Is it Faerun? I'm pretty sure it's Faerun.
Faerun,
It's set in Faerun. The D&D books. They're written by R.A. Salvatore, who has written like 35 Drist books. Drist is a dark elf from Menzo Baranzan, who lives up in the light area with all the other people up there. And I mean, at their heart, they're just action-packed, really heartfelt books. I mean, they're pretty deep for, I mean, they don't feel very deep, but there's some munchable stuff in those books. I mean, like,
definitely.
They get pretty heady sometimes.
Yeah, and like you get the, like, you know, Drist's whole character is, and that's probably why he's so compelling, is he's like from this race of dark elves that are naturally evil. Every one of them just comes out of the gate like murdering babies and stuff. Bad society, and he has a conscience of all of them. He is the one that was born with a conscience, and he struggles, you know, in Icewind Dale he's already free of that society, but he has this kind of lingering thoughts because that's where he's from. And so in the Icewind Dale, every time you get a new book, like within the book, you get a new like little diary entry from Drist.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like a little journal entry.
Yeah, a little journal entry of Drist just kind of talking directly to you, the reader, or maybe to himself. I'm not sure. But I remember as a kid reading those when I was like 13 and being like, those are my least favorite chunks. In fact, I skipped them after like the first second time. You know, I'd be like, no one cares. But they're so good. Now when I read them as an adult, they're like so compelling. And he's talking about, you know, the essence of truth or something. You know, he goes on, just kind of like waxes philosophical about some really deep thing that is on his mind.
Like friendship or honesty.
Yeah, friendship.
Or
love.
Courage.
And just like, yeah, they're really, like I said, they're in my brain as classical fantasy. But man, it's still, even now, you know, 20, 30 years after he wrote them, they're still very unique. And there is, I guess, maybe the quintessential thing about them is Faerun, right? Faerun is like the fantasy world. Whenever I think of like a fantasy world, it's Faerun.
This is more for our listener benefit to know this, but Icewind Dale was written first, and then, so that's three books. And then Salvatore wrote the Dark Elf trilogy, which is three books that are technically a prequel. They take place before the events of Icewind Dale.
And are amazing.
And it's funny, they're really good. I think I still like Icewind Dale a little bit more personally. Like, it just feels like more of an adventure. It doesn't feel as like claustrophobic, which I think is the point of the other books. But like,
claustrophobic is the right word.
It's interesting though, because when we were reading the Dark Elf trilogy, we have some episodes for that on the podcast, actually. You can go dig those up. But when we were reading those, I think one of my chief complaints was that it felt like so all over the place. Like it was really, it was just like this event, and then it seemed like wholly unconnected to like this other thing that just happened like right after it. So, and what I mean by that is like Driss would fight all these things, and then like nothing would really, it was very like episodic, like nothing would really come of it really. And then like 50 pages later, Driss is in like another part of the caves and he fights all this other stuff, and it's just like, what the hell is going on? But it's funny because reading Icewind Dale, there's a lot of parts where Driss is kind of like remembering like these like skirmishes that he had in the past that relate more to what he's seeing at Icewind Dale than like anything in the books where they're written later.
Totally,
you know what
totally.
I mean? So it's like, it's almost like, and this might not have been this process, but I was curious, like, I wonder if Salvatore was like, oh, I already wrote most of the stuff that happened in these books in Icewind Dale when Driss was like remembering all this random stuff I was just having. I'll just like flesh all that stuff out. And it's like, that's cool. The scenes in isolation are really cool. Right. But then like the rest of the book around it, except Homeland is the first book, is really, really good. That one's, those get
the first
progressively
book takes
worse.
The cake. They unfortunately do because like Homeland is already kind of a lonely book, right? Because you have Driss,
really
who
cool.
is born with a conscience at the end. He's the only one. And so he's like, yes, you're surrounded by other characters coming and going and stuff, but like Driss is like alone in a sense, and that he's the only one who's thinking the thoughts that he's thinking, and he has the struggles that he has. And then as the books progress, they become not only lonely in that like Driss is the only one with his thoughts, but they become lonely in that like Driss is like the only character, man. And there's just like a lot of those. Every time I reread them,
he's like spying on people and stuff.
Yeah, he's a little creepy. but yeah, I'm always surprised by how lonely the second sojourn in exile can be, because man, there's a lot of just like him padding along silently through caverns, you know, like. He pads everywhere.
Speaking of D&D books, I just got in the mail, I forgot that I ordered them, but I got the Dragonlance Legends books, which everybody who is a big Dragonlance fan, that's a fan of the show, was telling me for the last few months, like, you got to read Legends, you have to read Legends. It's Raistlin and his brother. I can't remember his brother's name. Sorry, I've got so many fantasy book characters on the brain. But apparently, the Dragonlance Legends books, Time of the Twins, War of the Twins, and Test of the Twins, apparently those are, like, better than Dragonlance Chronicles. I think a lot of people consider the Dragonlance Legends stuff, like the Raistlin stuff, to be the best of all the Dragonlance books. Which is saying, I mean, like, dude, like I said, those first ones are fantastic. Like, they're really, really cool. I've got them all on audiobook. I kind of throw them on every now and then if I'm, like, biking around or walking around or whatever. But yeah, I was excited to get those. But I didn't read those. I didn't actually read much of anything this week, everybody. Like I said last week, and kind of, you know, same thing for the next few weeks, probably. I am swamped with writing. I'm just completely in over my head, working long hours every day on this stuff. So it's like, it's been my main focus. It's been where all my mental energy has been going. I appreciate everybody's patience with us getting episodes out. I know that we're not as consistent as we were a few weeks ago. I'm just in like pedal to the metal, whatever euphemism, proverb you want to use for it. I'm just completely overwhelmed with work. But I'm really proud of the work that I'm doing. If I can pat myself on the back for just a second, writing the volume that I have been every single day for hours a day, if there's any writers out there that you want some advice that you didn't ask for, so you should write every day. Like, this is like the best relationship I've had with writing in months, like maybe years, maybe ever. I feel so much more confident about where I'm at. I love getting into these scenes. I feel like I'm honing my process down so much, and I'm just getting a lot more comfortable with looking at these words, you know. But that's just a huge, huge hurdle for writers, is getting over that kind of locomotive discomfort, I guess you could call it, almost like we're just like really sitting and hashing it out for a few minutes before you really get into any kind of rhythm. And the more I'm finding, at least for me personally, the more often and the higher volume that I'm writing, the faster I can get into that zone. And sometimes the zone is barely a zone. It's like maybe it's like kind of a zone, but it is a zone. Like, so there is a spectrum of like how much of a zone I'm in. But yeah, so for full transparency, everybody, like, yeah, I am definitely working really hard on this other project right now. The podcast is still a huge priority, of course. Chad is always a huge priority of mine. I think about him all
buddy.
Day, every day. I'm just like, what's Chad doing right now?
Dude, I know. What's Evan doing? What is he doing right now? He's probably writing.
I'm writing. Yeah. To that end, I barely read any of Empire of Storms, barely read any of Memories of Ice. I can see that Empire of Storms it might be one of my favorites of the whole series. I think it's a very promising so far. I'm not super far into it. I think it's going to be really cool. We're not doing the tandem read, but I think that that'll come with its own pros and cons. I think that the tandem read would have come with them too, but that's fine. And then, I mean, these books are getting beefy though. Like,
they are, dude.
They're getting really long.
Man, they're getting longer and longer.
Quite 700.
And longer.
I think the next book is over 700, and the one after that is almost 1,000. So we got our work cut out for us here. But yeah, hopefully we'll get both of those episodes out for you, everybody, the Malazan and the Throne of Glass episode. We will at least get one out for you. Again, thank you for your patience. But the book that I was spending a lot of time with this week was The Will of the Many by James Islington.
Ooh, nice. I've heard so much. Tell me everything.
Oh, man. Okay. So I'm going to try not to cross into spoiler territory here. I'm just about halfway through it. Like, I'm like a little bit on the just shy of halfway through the book. Dude, like, what? Where is... Sorry. This feels like a completely different writer. Like, this does not feel like the James Islington we were reading when we were reading Lycanius.
Man.
I mean, dude, Lycanius is fine. Like, I don't hate it. I never hated it when we were reading it.
It's just all over the place. He needs to eliminate ideas.
Man, this is streamlined. It's confident. The line to line is so good. The cadence, the pacing, the world building. Like, damn, like, this is just like a, this is a killer fantasy book, man. Like, it's really, wow, really good. Like, I really want to get into this and like really get in my feelings, but I'm going to wait until next week when I've finished it and I can get a little bit more into it. And I'll make a video, obviously, probably a pretty long video about this, because this is like, oh my God, I'm going to try not to overhype this, because I think I have a tendency to do that every now and then. But this is, I mean, dude, this, I'm like as excited about this as I was like the first time I was reading like Name of the Wind. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
really,
dude, it's just like, it's such a solid book. I mean, it's just, it's endlessly interesting. Like, it's just, and the more you read it, the more you're just like, holy shit, like, this is so good. Like, it's just,
wow,
it's the world that he's building. It's very based on like Roman Empire stuff. It's kind of giving me some Red Rising vibes, but it's almost like Red Rising if, nope, I don't want to, sorry.
Take out the science fiction maybe from Red Rising?
I just don't want to spoil anything, but it's, it's got some definite Roman Empire thing, but like the magic system is super interesting. I've never seen a magic system like this. It's like a society-based magic system.
It's
very
group
cool
oriented.
I don't want to go into too much.
Okay.
Dude, you should read this book. It's really, and it's funny,
you're making me want to read them.
It's funny because you know how it is, dude. Like, we're very much in this space. We were just talking about this at the top of the episode. We hear about books all the time. The Will of the Many has been one of those books where that's the one where it just keeps sending up alarm bells in my head for the last like 6 months. Like, it's just, that's the one people seem to be asking me about. That's the one people seem to be DMing me about. That's the one that I keep seeing people head over heels in love with in YouTube videos and TikTok videos and stuff. It's that one. And it's funny because,
wow,
I think typically I would have...
The Will of the Many. Oh, it's even making more sense now with the name.
The Will, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
It's funny because I don't think... I would have gotten to it like way sooner, I think, than I did just now. I mean, it's funny because I don't even know if you remember, but I had started it like weeks ago. I got like 15 pages into it and I was just like, oh my God. Like, I was just like overwhelmed because it was just spinning a bunch of different terms at me and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm reading Malazan. I don't want to deal with this right now. It's funny. I was headed to a coffee shop to go get some writing done. I always do a little bit of reading when I'm out writing too, just kind of like warm up my eyes and stuff. And I was going to start Small Gods, Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. I had it in my bag and then poor Will of the Many was sitting there with a bookmark at 15 pages into it on my side table next to my couch, and I was just like, I think I'm gonna give this another go. So I bring it along, I'm on the bus, I start from the very beginning, and I got to page 15 again before I got off the bus, right? I got to like almost exactly the same spot that I stopped reading, and I was like, maybe this is just gonna be one of those things. So like, but then I went to the coffee shop and then I read like 60 pages like before I was supposed to start writing. I'll read like 10 or 15 pages
stuck in it.
Yeah. And I just got stuck in there. But it's funny because like the first like 15, 20, 25 pages, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, this is, I don't really understand. But then
we didn't go back in time or anything or have a dream sequence.
Any of that. It's just, person. It seems like it's a single narrative, like first person story.
Okay.
Which cool. I'm really excited about. I mean, I'd be fine with more POVs, but I think it's just going to be this one. Man, it's just a really solid story. Like, I think you would really, really enjoy it. It takes a little bit to get where it's going.
It's okay. As long as where we're going is worth it, I'm okay with us taking a little bit of time to get there, you know?
Right around 100 pages, which, oddly enough, maybe this is why I was, like, comparing it to Name of the Wind. Because, like, Name of the Wind for me, it's like 100 pages in. I was like, oh, holy crap. Like, I love this.
But, totally.
That was the first time I read it. Not so much right now. But well, that's a whole different podcast that we've had. But anyway, with Will of the Many, about 100 pages. Yeah, give it about 100 pages, y'all, if you're curious about the book. Maybe a little bit less than that. Like, it's definitely really interesting pretty quickly. But about 100 pages in, I was like, damn. Like, the chops on this guy. Like, I mean, dude, James Islington, like I said, it's like he, it's just like, I would not have guessed. I'm not saying he was a really horrible author or anything like that. He was good. I mean, like Heinous is cool. It's just a...
His ability to write a story was fine. The story was just mayhem, kind of.
Yeah, and to be totally fair, 100% fair, 1000% fair, there are a couple plot points of The Will of the Many. I was like, a little hazy. I was like, what? Like,
okay.
You did that because of... that so you could get them
sure.
to okay and it's kind of how Lycanius was. There was like definitely a few conversations and at least The Shadow of What Was Lost where you're just like, whoa, back up, hang on a second, you want to do this so that they will do this so that they'll do this, but they think you're going to do this, and it's just like very ambitious and a little complex. But this doesn't feel even close to as complex as Lycanius. This feels very streamlined. It's very like visceral, like the world building. I feel very inserted here. I feel very immersed, just really curious about everything. And I'm just really excited. I mean, because I just, again, I'm a little more patting myself on the back here. I had this weird policy for so long where I wouldn't read the first book in a series if the series wasn't finished. And like, that's no way to live.
I remember that.
That's no way
that's
to
no
be,
way to live.
Man. Like, it's just no way to live.
People get car accidents and stuff. You're going to miss out on like the first couple books in series all the time, I feel like.
And think about how,
and it's nice to be relevant. And like read something that's just everyone's all hyped about, you know.
That is a cool thing, being a influencer, as the kids like to call me. But also the excitement
influenced me
of
all day, baby.
Going to buy the new book. Like I'm excited. Like
totally.
Now when it comes out, I can like film myself going to Barnes & Noble and like picking up the Barnes & Noble special edition and being like, haha, I got it. It's so exciting. And then like digging into it immediately or waiting,
which is so appropriate
to do it.
Cause you're kind of riding the train of the Will of the Many, right? That hype train that everyone is, the collective hype, you know, you can feel it and add to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. So I'll stop talking about it for now. I'll let you all know. I'll probably finish it this week and I'll let you all know my thoughts on it. I'll make a video and everything. But yeah, if you were on the fence about the Will of the Many, it definitely has my praise.
How long is it?
Check it out. 639 pages, I think. Pretty long, but it's not like super long. Like, I mean, I can knock it out. Like, this is such an old man gripe of mine. I'm just getting older. My eyesight's not what it used to be. Can we just don't make the font so small, you guys? Like, can we please stop making the font so small in these books? Like, what are you trying to prove? Like, just don't do it. Like, I know that you're trying to conserve paper or whatever. Stop, please just make it a little bit bigger. It's so frustrating. Like the font in some of these books, it's just like it's
so
minuscule,
tiny.
Dude, it's so small. Like okay, it's my rant.
I wonder if there's some sort of like, you know, publishers know that if a book is over x amount of pages that it like drastically reduces the number of sales because people are like, oh, 800 pages, I don't want to read that. And so like they'll reduce the size to maybe. I don't really know.
I think that could be it. I'm sure there's all kinds of different reasons. I mean, I'm not really that bent out of shape about it, but like I don't know, it's just like I just want the action, man. I want to turn pages, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm making more progress. It's like it doesn't matter, it's still the same amount of words, you know. I'm not telling James Islington like, hey, cut like 10,000 words out of this and then we'll talk. Get the font bigger, you know. But yeah, really enjoying that. I'll let everybody know what's going on with that. And I'll read some more of the other books, I promise. And then last thing that I'll talk about, and then I'll switch it over to you, Chad, because I really didn't do a whole lot else except for read The Will of the Many and write and a little bit more reading of other stuff. But I watched the first Fantastic Beasts movie.
Oh, yeah?
I hadn't seen it since it came out in theaters like 7 years ago or whatever. It's pretty good.
Like,
is it really?
I don't know if I ever saw any of them, honestly.
I mean, I'm sure somebody in their car right now is like, Evan has lost his marbles. That movie's so bad. I'm with you.
That's what I heard.
Listener,
and so I don't think I watched any of them.
I'm with you. I'm not saying it's a fantastic movie by any means, but it is definitely, it's like a watchable, very watchable movie. You should watch the first one. Like, it's definitely
okay.
I was like waiting for it to get terrible, and I was like, huh. I mean, it's like there's some kind of silly parts to it that are
totally.
I feel like tonally it's kind of all over the place. Like it's really whimsical and like fun. And then it's like gets like super dark for like like really dark.
I always think it's funny when like, movies do that. We're always like, da, 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 oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't know, in retrospect, or not necessarily in retrospect, but just thinking about it more, it's like, I don't know, it's like a pretty dark thing. Like,
it's not, totally.
I don't know. You should watch it. It's okay. It's not horrible. Like, it's fine.
Did oh my you God. Just watch
you read my mind. You read my freaking mind. Okay, so.
Right.
okay, so. I was not a super big fan of that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Why not?
Man, okay. I don't know, man. Okay. Okay. We got to talk about
Dude,
it a little
okay,
bit.
Okay. Wasn't so, that the scariest freaking dragon okay, you've ever so, dragged that has ever dragoned, though?
First of all, you noticed that dragon was Avasarala from The Expanse, right? Did you not notice
yes,
that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, cool. No,
so,
I
okay,
do that.
I was,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, how did Chad not notice that?
No,
okay,
no, no.
So,
I totally do that.
So her voice is, let me just say, first of all, that woman's voice
Amazing.
Might be the coolest voice of any person that's ever walked this earth.
Oh my
God.
Goodness.
Like, it's like James
Dude,
Earl
that
Jones.
Gravel? And,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, like, James Earl Jones.
A, yeah, such a good dragon. The dragon itself in that movie was outstanding. So cool. That's exactly what I want a dragon to look like.
Oh my gosh, I'm terrified.
Man, the premise was really cool. Like the premise of like, there's like yep. these, I don't want to give too much away of the movie. It's like the number one movie on Netflix. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it that are listening right now. But for those of you who haven't seen it, the premise is like, essentially, this noble family has been kind of like had a bad relationship
with the dragon.
Way to deal with the dragon that they would give them sacrifices basically, but they don't want to sacrifice their own daughters, so they like bring in like fake daughters and make a
yeah,
you know
smear
do blood.
Some blood on them
yeah
kick
yeah.
them in the
so,
dragon hole
premise is really cool. So I think that like where it kind of fell off for me personally was it was just like, what didn't I like about it? It's like, I think what really kind of bugged me about the movie was the whole beginning was really weird and slow. Like I felt like it was playing for time.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Not even kind of, it's like a kid's movie almost. It,
but I think that what they were trying to do, like I wasn't there on the set, I didn't write the book or anything, but I think what they were trying to do is kind of like a Parasite kind of thing, like a twist, you know what I mean, where they were like
oh, okay,
they were like trying to contrast it really hard, like heavily.
You thought you were watching this? Yeah,
maybe. But then and then if you know, it did work. I mean, it does, it gets really dark really fast.
Yeah,
I just like, I don't know, I didn't buy Millie Bobby Brown. I just wasn't buying it. Like,
huh, okay.
I think it was just like, I don't know. I don't know what it was. Like, I just can't see her as anything but Eleven from Stranger Things. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's like having Daniel Radcliffe
totally.
In that. Like, I don't know. It's just, and it's not Millie Bobby Brown's fault. I mean, I think that she's a really good actress. I mean, she was like, she did like her I'm really scared there's a dragon chasing after me really well.
Oh,
like
I
was believable, but like, yeah, I don't know. I think it was just like the writing felt like it was written by like AI, you know what I mean? Like the dialogue, like the conversations
totally,
that they were
totally.
Having with each other, like before the dragon stuff, the stuff like in the caves was like kind of cool, but then there was just, it felt like the whole, and I'm not trying to like knock the author of the book or anything, but it felt like the movie was made by AI. Like it felt like it was kind of like this procedural kind of like she climbs
exactly
like a
what you're
wall
talking about.
Of like she climbs like a wall of like razor sharp crystals and it's like doesn't bleed at all and it's like
no and she at first she's like, what? Oh, this is gonna like, suck, and then she's totally fine.
It's like 100% fine, like it's not Dude. A big deal at all. And then and
okay,
it's just,
I get where
there's
you're
like so many
from,
moments
totally.
Where like there's so many moments where like the dragon's just like, I'm gonna burn you alive, and then it's
yeah,
just like
yeah.
there's like that one part, and this is going to kind of spoil stuff, but I just got to get this out. Yep. There's like this one, the one part where like these guys like ride up on horses and she's like, oh my god, ah, people on horses, like come save me.
Totally,
and then, like,
yeah,
the
yeah.
dragon like flies up and
oh
like,
my god, did you
just
I just
doesn't
stop
notice
at that
the people on the horses like right down below there, like the dragon's just so preoccupied with her. I don't know. So
and then she's like just about to be burnt and the dragon's like, wait, what are these people over
what?
Here, and then flies off entirely. Like, why you wouldn't leave her
and
there
then,
like,
and then like the people
yeah.
still come into the cave anyway,
right,
which I
right,
thought was
right,
really
right.
weird. But so
that
I didn't think it was
lot.
Like a horrible movie. I think that you got me really excited about it.
Sorry, I mean, overhyped.
It's fine. I mean, okay. So a couple things I really did like about the movie. It looks amazing. Like
amazing.
It looks really good. I mean, Netflix, whatever cameras they're using there, and whoever's doing all the editing and cinematography at Netflix,
AI,
they're really sharp. Dude, seriously. Okay, so back to the AI thing. I mean, I just feel like some of the dialogue, some of the sequences and stuff, it was just like, I don't know. It felt too clean. Like, the whole movie felt too clean.
Totally. No, I get what you're
yeah,
saying.
The slug juice where it's just like, ah, she's burned, but, like, it's not a big deal at all. Ah,
no
she got burned
deal,
again,
yeah.
but it's, like, super not a big deal at all. It's, like, so many, like, conveniences and contrivances, but it's, like, it's so weird because the movie looks amazing. The music was cool.
Yeah.
Brown's performance was like, dude, she's so convincing. It's seeming really stressed out and like worried and like scared.
Oh
like she's such a good actor. So like,
she's
that's
such
cool.
A good actor.
I don't have any issues with all that. I mean, again, the dragon was really awesome. Her
dude,
dad was really cool. So,
I think for me, it was just the dragon. Like, the dragon was so
terrifying. I think you dropped
into
it without thinking about it.
Like, totally. I didn't have any of my own hype. I was just like, what's this? In fact, I thought I was going to hate it. I was like, here we go, Netflix. Let's see what you got for me. And then I was just like, so on the edge of my seat, being pursued by this dragon the whole time. That like at the beginning of the movie, not very good. Ending of the movie, not even very good. It was just
the middle's pretty good. Yeah, the middle's really
just
cool.
Her being chased
right.
by the dragon, and then the dragon talking. I can't even like mimic the voice, but they're just like haunting her and being like, oh, I just like even thinking about it gives me the chills. I'm just like, what a dragon, you know? Like,
it would be scary enough to be in that situation with a dragon, but one that's talking to you, like, oh, you're fast,
dude.
You're clever. I'm going to have fun with you before I murder you. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I think I was just
really
like taken by surprise at how awesome and scary that, because dragons are always so regal and they have this like majesty about them. And that dragon was like an animal, like a beast, you know, but
really
was also
too.
Still had the nobility somehow.
Sure.
Man, I just really like that dragon.
I think I would give the movie like a good like 6 out of 10. Like, I think parts of it were
totally.
Really cool. I think I was just hoping for it to be like the horror fantasy movie that like it could have been.
Yeah,
but it just kind of
I
think I don't want to spoil too much, so I'll move away from it. But there's just like some parts that I still want to talk to you about, maybe off air, where it's just like well, I'm gonna say one more thing about it. There's like a map, right? She like finds a map. What was really cool is like her really liking mazes, and like there's like a map, she's in a maze. I thought that was really awesome, super awesome thing to nod in there. But anyway, there's like this map that she finds, and then there's like, it's like a drawing of like this wall of crystals, right? And it's like a cool wall of crystals.
Totally
that's a thing for sure. And then it's like sunlight, right? And she's like, that's the way out. And then like
that's
she gets
the way out.
And then like the map didn't depict that, like it's just like this sheer 1,000-foot drop cliff face.
Totally.
You know,
like
whoever
like,
drew the map
not?
Was just like, that's probably the way out.
Totally. I mean, I don't know, because if you're like, oh well, the person who drew that like didn't have the chance to like come back and say you can't, but then like how do they draw it there in the first place, you know? Like
that's why they had to be like, that's probably the way out.
yeah and they definitely had some parts where it was like, okay, like she actually gets some hints from like these dream flashes that she gets from previous damsels that have been dropped in there, but like how was that? Like, are there ghosts like still around, I guess, or something, you know?
You know, we should just put a spoiler tag on this part of the episode, because I actually kind of do want to dig into it a little
bit. Okay, let's do it. The spoilers, guys. Go
like
forward,
the very
like,
end
minutes.
Was like the very end where it like shows like the way that the dragon's like lava could like bounce back. Like there just happens to be this like perfectly shaped rock, and like all the ghosts are like, this is the rock. This is
and
the
fact
one
that she's
work.
Able to get out of its way fast enough. Like, no way are you dodging sideways out of dragonfire.
Well,
sorry.
Also, like why would dragonfire kill a dragon?
Totally, like it could. Like, that dragon fire was in its throat. Like it can swallow it, but it can't get it some on its snout.
That was And then like, doesn't she get like stabbed like in the side with one of the dragon claws? It's like this big dramatic scene where like the dragon claw like slowly like sinks into her side,
dude,
like
oh my
penetrates
gosh,
into her ribs,
so
and she like
too.
Screams and it's like super intense, and then it's just like
it's
super
awful.
Not a big deal for the rest
dude,
of the movie.
Right.
It's like,
I, like,
not a big deal.
You never noticed that she like sprints after that.
Yeah.
I'm, like,
oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and like the
dude,
way that she
like
so
it's like
so her
Saving
sister
Private Ryan
away.
With like slowly sinking into her.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so her
rough.
Sister gets taken away, right? Her sister gets taken away, and then she like sprints back to the cave, and then like does the whole gauntlet again with like perfect.
Totally.
She like shows
yeah,
her
like,
jumping
no
over the chasm, and she's just she's getting all her fucking like healing bugs back together and stuff, and it's just so funny. Like it's just it
the
took
fact
such
that
a
no
turn.
One gets hurt from going in, getting thrown into the pit in the first
place,
sister, right?
Like hurt her leg or something, like broke her
leg. That's right, huh? That's
like a
right.
200
yeah.
foot fall or
that's
something.
A long
like
way.
But there's
yeah,
like branches like, that kind of like break your
yeah,
fall though too.
Still, dude. That's rough.
I feel like we're doing cinema sins here, but like, okay, there's another thing that like really bugged me. And it was like,
hit me, baby.
So the first cave that she gets to, like there's a bird that's on fire, right? Cool.
Right. Imagery, right.
I dig it. And then like 100 other birds come out and they're all
so
on
many
fire.
Birds.
It's a really cool image, but it's funny because the map that she finds has like a cave with birds that are on
with
fire.
It's like, yeah, it's like, how does that, how do they repopulate?
Does this dragon just have like hundreds of birds on retainer?
Totally. And like, how stupid are these birds?
To like scare the, like, oh, this is the part where I burn 100 birds and another throw them all at her.
She's got it all like mapped out.
Got like a whole
this
process.
This is the part where I burn the, send in the birds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's like, it, oh man, it's just, it's such a dorky movie that.
Dorky is a great way of putting it.
But it works though. I don't know. It's yeah. It's, I was convinced. I was like worried about her. You know what I mean? Like I was on board and I finished the movie, but there was just so many parts where I was just like, okay, well, sure.
All right. Okay.
That's totally cool. All right. Like when she stabs the dragon's hand and the dragon just like, it's just like, oh my God. It just like throws her, you know,
ow.
It's just like, why would that yeah. dragon like care at all about that? You know, but
totally,
I did like how
totally.
The dragons, like the dragon's like babies had been killed, which that's weird though. You know what I mean? Like, why would they kill the dragon's babies? Like,
I know they
like what's
why?
The point?
And like, that
like, I wish it was kind of like elaborated
too.
More.
Yeah,
I know. And it's like, I'm really digging it, baby. But it's just funny how like at the beginning of the movie, it's like it doesn't show them killing the babies, you know. But then like later in the movie, it does show them killing the babies.
Totally.
It's like,
totally.
Why don't you just show it at the beginning? That doesn't make
right,
me
right,
any
right. Like we know they're dead.
I'd
we
actually be fine
them.
With knowing that the dragon's really pissed off about that. Like
totally.
What's the problem here? You know what I mean? Like I don't like. Why do you have to like mess with me, movie? Don't lie to
totally.
Me. You
and,
don't
like,
have to lie to kick it. You know.
We need three. We get a lot to kick it. We need three princesses a year. Like every year, damn. A lot
I don't,
of princesses.
Do you think, okay, oh my God, we're ripping this apart now. But don't you think that like word would have gotten around? Like, don't send your princesses like for
dude,
hundreds of years. Like this one
I
kingdom
know.
Has been offing princesses. You know, what I mean? like don't you think word would have gotten around? Like, oh, don't go to that island. They'll kill
dude,
your
don't
daughter.
Go
you know?
Over
like,
there.
Like our daughter, nobody's
like
daughters
nothing,
come back.
Dude.
You know, like all these rich daughterless nobles keep coming back from that island.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know?
All right, that's it. We're gonna go ahead and make sure that's spoiler tagged. We don't often do that in these episodes, but I just had to me and Effie, somebody in the Discord mentioned that they Mystery Science 3000 like that whole movie, and that's exactly what me and Effie did for sure. We were just like, what the hell is going on right now?
Yeah, it's okay. Well, I'm glad that we did, because I didn't you know, my week, whenever you have your weeks, you're like, I didn't read a ton. I always am like, I'm gonna take a nice little like vacation week myself here, because I just I read Memories of Ice, did that.
Oh, cool.
Been reading it. It's nice. Again, I'm still really just riding on my like, I miss Carsa Orlong. And you know, the more because I thought he was going to be a character in this book, and I think that these books, a lot of this story is meant to set up his character, because I just think he's more important than I gave him credit for the first time that I read these books. Because like the more I'm like,
we shall see.
Yeah, the more I'm looking at it through that perspective, I'm like, he's really setting up this Carsa character, which is great because he's, again, one of my favorite characters in all of fantasy. So that's good. Steven Erikson, you just, what a writer, man. That guy's keeping me going. There's some weeks that I need to like pull back a little bit from it, because it just gets a little dark, man. The Penny and Seer, like, ooh, we're Penny and Domin, like,
yeah,
oh gosh,
I'm not looking forward to that.
Oh my goodness, man, it gets, you think you've had it all with the Chain of Dogs, and then no we have not.
Yay.
Yeah Throne of Glass,
terrific.
Reading that. Queen of Shadows, enjoyed it.
Around Empire of Storms,
but now. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You finished. Oh, yeah,
we finished
Shadows,
did the episode,
yeah, sorry,
and then now on
that.
To
yeah,
Empire
yeah.
of Storms, which is fun. I like it. I'm not very far into it, but, you know, it's a continuation of the story. I almost wish it wasn't so long. It seems like a lot of
it's fine.
Like subtle looks and stuff, and maybe like less of that, you know, and more just like punchy storyline would be appreciated. But,
well,
you know,
hey. Let's not count our chickens, you know, maybe
exactly.
Not counting on it, but
so I yeah. And then I'm on the Combat Codes. I'm about halfway through the second one. Alexander Darwin, man, just killing his game. I've never enjoyed reading about fight scenes as much as I do from Alexander Darwin. Like his
wow, that is quite the accolade, man. That is praise
and
from Chad.
That is very high praise because I'm all about the fight. And let me like be very specific here with what I'm saying, because it's not the large scale battles. I'm sure he excels at those too, but it's the one-on-one fights. It's the one-on-one fights. Him, he's right up there with like R.A. Salvatore capturing my heart as Dritz skitters around and fights Artemis and Triri. It's just so good. And you can tell that he himself has so much personal experience like in the ring. And it's just the way that he describes the movements of a person. Like I said, if you have done Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you can literally learn things from what his character is doing in these battle so rings. Like it's so cool. Like I've learned really cool like ways to take the back. Like it's just really, really, really awesome. And I love them a lot. I like his characters a bunch. They're just, man, they're very good and exactly kind of what I needed, because like you know, my complaints about Throne of Glass was like, give me some like punchy storyline. And this, there's very little fat on the Compact Codes. It is both the characters and the way that his story kind of expresses itself and grows. It's just punchy, fast, fun action, and I love it oh so much. I did a little bit of writing. You inspired me a few of the days. I was like, I'm good at Evan's writing. I might as well write too. I managed to think up of a prologue, which I'm really stoked about for the story that I'm writing, that I really liked a bunch and spent some time on that. So that was pretty cool. I know you hate like a pantheon of gods, but I might have made a pantheon of gods.
Not all of them. You know, it depends.
Yeah. Well, I kind of take a page from Steven Erikson's book in that it wasn't like, they're not like quite gods, or more like the ascendants. You know, he flirts with the god idea with his ascendants, you know. Have you ever watched The First Night with Richard Gere? I was putting R and extra R in his name.
I have no idea what that is.
First off, you know who Richard Gere is, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Pretty Woman. Richard Gere is great, by the way. I think he's like top five actors. I love Richard Gere. He's great. Dude, right. He's so good. I watched The First Night. It's where he's like, he's playing Lancelot, and it's like a love story at its heart. It's just great. It's like old. It's kind of like, it's a little cringy in like how old it is. Like there's just times where like, yeah, I mean, it's more like a Knights of the Old. It's like an Arthur Knights of the Round Table movie, you know, like there's Camelot, the Kingdom of Camelot. It's like just risen to power kind of. And you got this like. Let's see. Sean Connery plays like King Arthur, like this very Sean Connery is so funny because every other movie that Sean Connery is in, he's the only one with the thick accent that he has, you know, and he's just ridiculous. Like, his accent works. No one talks like that. Like, I would love to have a conversation. I'd love to get coffee with Sean Connery and see if he's just like. Like talks like that in his day-to-day life.
I bet he does too. Like Larry the Cable Guy. He's just faking it.
The First Night, you should watch it. It's on Netflix. It was probably made in like 95 or something. Great sword fighting. It's a love story at its heart. And it's simple and fun to watch. It's a little like kitschy sometimes, but like whatever. It was a great movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. If you're looking for something fun to do, watch The First Night on Netflix, because damn, it was great.
It's funny that you mentioned something with the word night in it, because I forgot to mention that I rewatched The Green Knight, that A24 movie with Dev Patel. Dude, I liked it even more the second time around. I don't know why you don't like it.
That movie
it's so good.
What?
It's really good. I love it. I think it's a magnificent movie. Yeah, it's weird.
Wow.
It's trippy.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
And so trippy. You really like.
We have different tastes in movies.
We have different tastes in movies. Yeah. Because it's funny because like I think even as I was watching it, I was like, I can see why Evan liked this so much. But man,
I was rewatching it. And I was like, I can see why Chad hated this so much. But go ahead. I interrupted you. I had rewatched that. Go ahead.
Oh, I've continued watching The Last Airbender. Yeah. Still watching that. Enjoying the hell out of it.
Is it good? Cool. I need to watch
it. It's great. It's great, man. I won't go off about it, but I'm just really, really, really enjoying it. And that's all I got for my week, man. It was a nice week.
Cool.
I just, Yeah, just been reading and enjoying stuff, trying to get some things done, and I'm finishing up an audiobook that I was hired to do, and so I've been putting a lot of time into that.
Hell
so
yeah,
yeah, it's been nice. It's been real nice, and man, reading the lengthy recaps that we've been doing for like our Malazan and the Throne of Glass has been really helping my audio. It's been helping me practice for the audiobook stuff, just because like the pacing, you know, I got to be really slow and stuff. And as anyone who's listened to me talk for a long period of time knows, I'm not very slow of a talker. I just go. So it's been nice to learn how to calm down and have some
slow
nice,
down a little
slow talks, you know.
Enjoy the scenery.
Yeah, you gotta stop and enjoy the scenery. I mean, will I do that when I'm talking in conversations? No, because I got points to make.
All right, so that's our weeks wrapped up. Let's do a question. We have a question from the Discord, everybody.
Ooh, very
Thank
nice.
You, everybody, for giving us questions. You're giving us an unlimited amount of stuff to talk about without us having to work very hard. So this is a question from Ben B, and Ben
Thanks,
B
Ben.
Asks, if you found yourself sitting next to your favorite author on a plane/train/bus, what question would you ask beyond what are you currently writing?
Ooh.
And like I said, every week, Chad and I don't really talk about these questions before we answer them. So this is very off the cuff.
It's hard for me to even answer which one is my favorite author. You know,
right. I jumped to Stephen King.
Oh, nice. Yeah, no, that's a good go-to. I jumped to Salvatore.
Okay. I think Robin Hobb, though, I think is the person that I would actually, like, I would love to meet Stephen King.
Yeah.
I feel like Robin Hobb would be more, like, receptive to a long conversation. You know what I mean? Like, on
a bus.
Like, I feel like Stephen King would, like, want to read, and he would probably, like, very cordially, probably pretty nicely, but probably very curtly, like, tell me to fuck off.
You know what
I mean? He'd be like, I don't want to talk to you, man. And I'd be like, that totally makes sense. But I feel like Robin Hobb maybe would want to talk about it. But maybe, I don't know. King might want to talk about it a little bit, but yeah. But anyway, what would yours for Salvatore?
I think I'd want to know, like, what is, and this is like, I don't know if it's Salvatore who's my favorite author or anything. He was just the first knee-jerk that I thought that I jumped to. But regardless of the author, I think I would want to know, what is the story that you've never wrote?
Whoa, that's like a really cool question, man. I love
that.
Yeah,
like what did you like either write and then delete, or what are you intimidated by? What is like touching on a subject matter that you don't think that you're author enough to write, you know, and why? Because I really think that would be their best writing, probably.
Interesting. And answer. Yeah.
And like, why is it something that you're scared of, intimidated? Because it would probably get into some real good juice of like something with that's happened to them personally that would be very interesting, that they're either too ashamed to write about, or don't think that they would find relatable. They don't think that their readers would find relatable, though I bet it's always the things that we think that we don't want to talk about that is the most universally relatable, you know? And so, yeah, I would love to know the story that they have been putting off writing. What is it that you haven't written that you want to, but you're scared of?
I love that. That's great.
Thank you.
Like, more than a question, really, I think I would just try to like lead the conversation to Hobbes' amazing ability to write so long, but keep it so compelling.
Like, how?
Like, how are you doing that?
It's like, not even the things that are happening in her story. Sometimes it's boring,
dude. Like, like Golden Fool by Robin Hobb, the second book of the Tawny Man trilogy, is one of the most boring books I've ever read.
Totally.
But I read it cover to cover in a matter of days, and it's like 750 pages long, and it's just Fitz just wringing his hands and just super worried about stuff, just walking around a castle. And it's just so freaking compelling, man. And I want to ask Hobb, like, what are you like thinking about
when you're capturing? Doing,
like,
what is the
essence? What are you going for here? Like, what is your, like, when you're typing, like, what are you deleting? You know, like, what's not working for you? Because it seems like everything.
Right, she understands something about how we think, I think. That's,
oh my God,
really
so
captivating
much.
That I don't know if the average person gets, maybe.
She's just so deliberate.
I don't get it.
And slow, and like, I mean, she's just so in depth with everything, and it's just like everything takes forever with those books. Everything takes so long, but you're so there for the ride. And I feel like with my writing, like, I always have had trouble with like feeling like I'm writing too much. I need to tighten it up. I need to keep the pacing higher, you know? And I've had like editors and my agent be like, hey, you could loosen this up a little bit, man. Like, this doesn't need to be so tightly wound.
I've literally told you that. Yeah, I'm like, Evan, it's fine to add a little backstory here, man. Your story's punching me in the face like every time I turn a corner, you know?
Which is cool in its own right, you know what I mean?
But I'd way rather have it be more punchy than not punchy enough, you know?
Right, but that's why I'm so fascinated with Hob, is because sometimes there's just no punch for like hundreds of pages. Like, there's nothing happening. But it's so captivating. If I was to guess, I mean, after having read so many of her books, I'd say the characters are it's just like the way they talk to each other, the way that Fitz thinks, this atmosphere of the six duchies, and like more specifically Buckkeep. Holy. I think it's just a place that you just never want to leave, you know?
Yeah.
And also, you know, with Hob that anything could happen at any moment. Like, she could just like murder somebody, and like she's very ruthless with her characters and her developments and stuff. Like, all of a sudden somebody's poisoned, and now it's just now we're here, and it just happened like one paragraph, when the whole 150 pages before that was like a feast, you know? It's just like, oh my God.
Right.
So like, this person has to talk to this person, and then this person has to talk to this person, and it's just a lot of that. But yeah, man,
let me ask you
good.
A question real fast. What that just kind of popped into my brain that I think might be interesting. What about Stephen King do you find so compelling? Like, you love his books so much. What is that? Why, I guess, do you love Stephen King so much? Not that I don't. I just I just want to know why specifically that you do.
I think it's his voice for me. Like, it's his attention to detail. It's his voice. It's his ideas. The way that his stories just kind of like develop. He goes characters first, and he just kind of like sees where they go. So, you know, by extension, I feel like the reader, it's kind of like the same thing with Hob, where it's just like anything could happen at any moment. I love that.
Seriously.
I mean, I think that Stephen King for me also, I feel like there's a certain kind of like nostalgia for like the 80s and 90s, kind of like the reason why people like Stranger Things so much. I think King has like this kind of like classic Americana to him that, like, it's like Wilco and barbecue sauce, man. Like, it's just, there's something about it that's very kind of like boys on bikes, sprinklers in the summertime kind of thing that I think that he just like really
sprinklers
captures
in the
even
summertime.
Like, even when he's not doing that, you know what I mean? It's just like, there's something about his voice.
Right.
And another thing too, that I really love about King is like, he is easily one of the most confident writers I've ever read. Like, I mean, just,
he's very like, confident.
Yeah, he throws down. Like, he is very like, it's hard to explain, man. It's like, it's just
I know exactly what you're talking about. You're not critiquing his story because you assume he knows better, almost, you know?
Maybe, yeah, because I've critiqued some of his stories, but like, I think that he's just, you can just tell from reading it how much he loves doing it, you know?
Totally.
Like, even with Fairy Tale, like one of the newer books of his, like even like the first chapter of Fairy Tale is so good. Like, it's so solid. He's just been doing it for so long. I don't think he's getting better with age necessarily, but I don't think he's gotten worse. I think that he had like a weird lull, but I think that he's been putting out some pretty certified bangers over the last decade. But like, I don't think anything's really going to touch his like coke-fueled, you know, pack-a-day smoking. Like, I mean, really, like, I wish that I could say differently, but you know, like the 80s King is like pretty peak.
There was
King,
like a trauma that he was able to write into his stories because of the shit that he was going through. The emotional turmoil that he was in is able to be expressed really well, and kind of the hellish scapes that he throws you into in those early novels.
Cool. I think that's going to do it for us today, everybody. I need to go read. Like, I really need to go read.
Me too.
I've been slacking. I'm not really slacking overall because I've been working a lot, but also slacking on the reading. I need to go get some reading done. Chad, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, man. Man, I miss you when I don't talk to you during the weeks, but I know that I have these Monday morning episodes to just kind of scratch my Evan itch. And I love talking about books, so it's never going to get old.
And we love talking about books in front of all of you, with all of you here
listening
to us talking about books. But until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening to the Monday Morning Minute. We have a couple episodes hopefully coming out this week, depending on our schedules. We're going to go read right now. We're going to go try to get all those words into our heads so we can say more words into our microphones. But until then, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We have a Patreon. It helps out a whole bunch. We have a Discord. We have we have social media accounts. We have a YouTube channel. We have a podcast. In case you didn't know, we have a podcast. It's called Book Reviews Kill.
It's awesome.
I'm gonna go. That's the end of the episode. That's it.
All right.
That's all the words we're going to say.
All right, cool.
Everybody, hope you have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.